Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 3rd of March. Mondays at 9 o'clock, all things political. And things are cooking this week in Texas and in Ohio and Vermont and Rhode Island. We're going to be talking about all of those races and some big questions to ask here. Clinton, as I said just a minute ago or so, campaign officials are saying that if Barack Obama does not win all four of the contests tomorrow, that it would signal buyer's remorse and it would be reason to continue their campaign to April 22nd when Pennsylvania will be having their primary. The Barack Obama campaign is saying that even victories by Clinton in the popular vote wouldn't be enough to give her the needed pledge delegates to change the mathematical hurdles of trying to overtake Barack Obama. So we're going to be looking at all of this and whether or not this race could be decided by Wednesday. What about if she wins? And a lot of people are saying this is likely. She wins Ohio, she loses Texas, she wins Rhode Island, she loses Vermont. Then what happens? What do you think should happen? We're so happy to have Vincent Dowd with us again. It's nice to get a perspective from somebody who grew up in another country and is reporting for the BBC on this big election in the United States. Vincent is the Washington correspondent for the BBC, and we, I know, will be flooded with phone calls as we are this day before these all-important primaries. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Joining us in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. And, well, we also have an email, I think, that you can use today, and that's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Vincent, hello. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Very nice to be here. I do apologize for being on the phone line. We couldn't get our technology to work this morning, but nonetheless, I'm sure we've got lots and lots to talk about.
Yes, we do, and you sound fine. It's crystal clear connections,
so
don't worry. Well, this is going to be a big week in American politics, don't you think?
Yes, no, it's absolutely fascinating. Don't forget, I've only been here since last summer, so I've had the massive luxury, really, as a journalist to come in just as this amazing story was beginning. And, you know, there have been some of my colleagues who've been here before for electoral campaigns which didn't catch fire. But, I mean, it really has been the most fascinating election campaign. And, you know, I'm sure you know when you go abroad as a foreign correspondent, you always have a kind of fear at the back of your mind that you might be there in a slightly dead period and London might not be very interested, although primarily I'm reporting for the rest of the world. But it sort of depends what London's interested in. But no, I think people are fascinated around the world with what's been going on.
Yeah, I have read that the stories are playing, you know, front page all over newspapers in Europe, right?
Yeah, no, it's true. Look at any European newspaper, not just the English language ones, France, Germany, Italy, all around the place. And also kind of my bosses have had to take on board certain financial considerations because we're spending far more on covering this election campaign than we thought we were going to be. We thought, like, let's be honest, most of us, by now the entire thing would be over. Or not over as such, but would be decided. Instead of which, of course, although I'll be here, plenty of my colleagues are kind of fanning out around the country to, you know, go to Ohio and go to Texas. So it's still a story which is being, maybe not today necessarily, but certainly tomorrow will be at the top of the news bulletin.
So the money isn't all being spent on Dunkin' Donuts.
No, it's not. No,
it's being spent on in air travel. Do you think, Vincent? There's so much spin around what will happen, considering what happens tomorrow. What do you think? Will it be determining whether or not Hillary Clinton stays in the race? And a lot of people are saying she could probably win Ohio. She will probably lose Texas. The other states are probably too small to make a huge difference here. Would she leave the race if she lost Texas?
Well, it's interesting. If she lost Texas really badly, if I can put it like that, and if there was a win in Ohio, but it was a technical win, if she just won, if she just scraped in, you know, you might argue, well, is there much point in her going on? I'm sure she would put forward the Mike Huckabee argument. I mean, from looking at it from the point of view of a different party, that there we are, she's in the campaign for the long term. If, however, she wins both, I think received wisdom in this instance is probably correct, that She won't win Texas, but she probably will win Ohio. If she wins one but not the other, I suppose she will plow on all the way to the end of next month. But it does begin to look like a kind of forlorn task, doesn't it? But then you have to take on board. If you watched her, I know this may sound strange, but if you watched her on Saturday Night Live, for instance, on Saturday on TV, you saw her actually looking incredibly chipper and incredibly kind of perky about the entire thing.
Yeah.
And you think, well, there's not a woman. Well, either there is a woman who thinks she's facing political mortality and is being incredibly good at hiding the fact, or she genuinely believes she can continue. I don't think in journalism you should ever take anything for granted, so let's see what happens over the next 36 hours or so.
There are some people, though, that say that even if she won all four of these, she still wouldn't have the number of delegates. And then what would happen?
Yes, I suppose we get into the murky area, don't we, of superdelegates. And that's one of the things, as a Brit, you don't really know what on earth superdelegates are, although I take some comfort from thinking probably not many Americans do either.
Yeah, you're right.
By and large, when you get into the detail, it's incredibly complicated. But obviously, Senator Obama has been picking up superdelegates. She has been losing a small number of them. You see, it's so strange, again, as a Brit, you come over here and you think, well, can it really be the case that the superdelegates would dare overturn the popular vote, so to speak? Well, I shouldn't say it was popular vote, but the party vote, the vote within the party. So that's the area which is completely opaque, I think, at the moment. If you're looking for cut and dried, I think, in this election, you can forget it. Everything is nuanced. Everything is very, very subtle.
Right. Who's creating the most stir in England? Are both of them? Is there as much interest in Hillary Clinton as there is in Barack Obama? What stories are you writing more of?
Well, you know, when I came over here last summer, in fact, even before I came over, I did a small program about Barack Obama, just a kind of 10-minute program. And I suspect for most of our listeners, and don't forget, primarily I'm broadcasting to listeners around the world. So it's not just in Britain, although the World Service is listened to a lot in the UK as well. I suspect for many of them, it was pretty much the first thing they had ever kind of really heard about him, other than just the name check. So then we had a great period of interest in him. But then I think when people began to get in the drama, and also, of course, vacuums, so to speak, are interesting and important in journalism, because there's a bit of a vacuum in the story on the Republican side. It's so on hold. There's not really a story. We know that John McCain will be the nominee, but he's not quite there yet. That leaves the Democrat story to completely fill in the gap, so to speak. So I think people were interested in Obama, and then they were interested more in Hillary Clinton. And now I'd say it's fairly equal. I suppose there is perhaps a slight sense growing now, as perhaps there is in the US as well, being realistic, of people saying, well, can we please get to the end of this chapter? Because it's sometimes hard to remember that we're still, whatever it is, almost, not quite, but almost 6 months out from the election itself, from the general election. And I think people now want to, you know, like a long novel, they want to get into the next bit where we've actually got John McCain versus somebody. And I suppose that's what we'll be moving on to before too long.
And Vincent, does it behoove the Democrats to get to the end of the chapter pretty soon?
Well, now, this is interesting. I feel slightly hesitant about, as a mere Briton, kind of expressing opinion on this. One does often find people saying, well, isn't it kind of bad if they go to Denver in the last week of August to the convention with no agreed candidate? But kind of as a semi-outsider to this, I say, as it happens, I've been doing some stuff about the 1960s recently, in which era, of course, the conventions did pretty much choose the nominee. They weren't nominal, as they've effectively become in the last 3 or 4 decades. And I suppose, if I may play devil's advocate, what's wrong with that? I don't quite buy this line of people saying, well, it's really bad for party unity if the choice of candidate goes right down to the wire. Isn't that what democracies are supposed to be about? I think in some ways, you know, in Britain and maybe Europe generally, but especially in the UK, electoral processes and the choice and the process of choosing a party leader, with the exception of the most recent case where Gordon Brown kind of inherited the crown from Tony Blair, but normally they're quite bloody affairs, you know. And I suppose you come here and they're kind of quite polite. So I would say, as a mere Brit, what's wrong with taking it all the way to Denver on the, whatever it is, the 25th of August? I mean, isn't that what democracy is supposed to be about?
So you think that this campaign has been pretty polite?
Yeah, well, yes. You know, people keep saying, oh, it's been very, very kind of tough and very rough. Well, again, I can only go through, you know, my kind of whatever it is now, 20 years of journalistic background in the UK. It tends to be tougher and rougher in Britain. Again, in parentheses, the more recent one with Blair and Brown was something of a more presidential situation, but that was a kind of one-off, really. Here, I think when people say things are rough and tough, what they're talking about is the way that at one point the race issue became very, very awkward here. Now, that raises such sensitivities all around the world, quite rightly, but especially in the US, that I think people were very sensitized to that part of the debate, from which I suppose we've now moved on. But beyond that, and as being a slightly separate category, beyond that, I do find things here. I find American political life, indeed American public life more generally, very polite compared to the roughness and toughness of the UK. Very briefly, I'm sure on C-SPAN or whatever, you've seen, most people will have seen little bits of the House of Commons.
Right.
And they will know that compared to what goes on in Washington, D.C., the House of Commons, especially, not the Lords, but the House of Commons, can be pretty aggressive. And that aggression, I slightly miss in American politics, but maybe that's just my cynical Brit view.
You know, I sit here somewhat flabbergasted that we've been talking about this race for such a long period of time, and you must as well be flabbergasted because your races are relatively short, aren't they?
Yes, there's no actual kind of set program when it comes to a UK election, but broadly speaking, you're talking about 5 or 6 weeks, yes.
Five or six weeks.
Because, of course, it's absolutely obvious when you think about it, we don't have a primary system. In other words, we're not having parties choosing candidates every 4 or 8 years. We are choosing a government. So it's very, very different. I mean, I think we're often confused by the fact that we more or less speak the same language into thinking that we live in similarly structured societies. But British society and American society, as I'm aware every day, are very, very different. And the linguistic thing, you know, it's a bit of a red herring in some ways, because the ways our societies work are very different, and the way our politics work is really totally different.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about Texas and Ohio. What is it about Texas that is giving Barack Obama an advantage, and what is it about Ohio that's giving Hillary Clinton an advantage, Vincent?
Well, we come back to the racing. It ought to be, I suppose, the fact that in Texas we have, I think, the second largest number of Hispanic citizens and therefore more or less Hispanic voters, which are who may be affecting what the result tomorrow. Now, of course, we used to think, and when I say used, this is such a quick-changing election. Even a month ago, we were saying, I think I did pieces, which kind of blithely said, broadly speaking, the Clinton camp thinks it's got much more of an in into the Hispanic vote. Now, I don't think that is necessarily the case anymore. I think we've become, to reuse that current journalistic cliche, much more nuanced about what we think about the Hispanic vote. That's one thing. And then, of course, we also must refer, perhaps only fleetingly, because it's terribly complicated, to the fact that Texas has a very particular electoral structure, including both polls in the what you might call the UK sense and also caucuses. Now, most people reckon that in the areas this will give Senator Obama something of an advantage when it comes to delegates, that broadly speaking, a vote for him will be twice as useful in gaining delegates as it will be for Hillary Clinton. It's very complicated, and the way that Texas, or the Democrats anyway in Texas, run their system is, I think we could politely say, opaque. That's broadly how it works. In Ohio, well, of course, that Rust Belt state, that's exactly the kind of area with lots and lots of blue-collar white guys who tend to have been voting for her. So we are still thinking that's very much her natural territory. But if you look at the current polls, and I have all the hesitations about polls that we
yes.
all have, and we should definitely have given what happened in New Hampshire and whatever, but even so, the polls do seem to show her lead being eroded. But I think we still think that, broadly speaking, remains natural Hillary Clinton territory.
What do you think of her comment, Vincent, that Ohio truly does represent America, the hopes and aspirations, the challenges, opportunities, they're all right here in Ohio. It is a picture of America.
Isn't that just politicians' waffle? Isn't that what all politicians say in every state they go to? And I'm not saying she's any more full of baloney and waffle than her chief rival is, because that's the kind of things that politicians say. One of the things which, again, you have to face up to when you come here to report from the UK, which, let's be honest, the UK is really only the size of one big state. You could fit Britain pretty much into, say, Montana, in terms of its size, is that you realise that when you come here, politicians are saying different things in different states. And they are saying things to appeal to an African-American vote there, They're saying things to appeal to a Hispanic vote. They're going to an industrial state, and they say things of the kind of things which Hillary Clinton said, the one you just quoted. And then Senator Obama will go somewhere which maybe is full of what you might call the college professor vote. I'm slightly parodying there, but that's broadly speaking been his kind of natural territory as well. And you realize that in America you have to take on board that people say different things at different times, talking to different audiences, because of the vast geography of this amazing country compared to a small country like my own.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that it's fair to say that people in Europe and in other parts of the world, so much has been written about the fact that we've lost our stature in the world, particularly because of what happened in Iraq and continues to happen in Iraq. Is the world anxiously awaiting a change of administration in America?
Well, I've said this before, and I'll say it again, because I think it's true, or it's kind of vaguely controversial, but I think it's definitely true that the rest of the world, and I suppose I'm really thinking of Europe, and especially Western Europe here, tends to be more settled, let's put it no more strongly than that, when there's a Democrat in the White House. Mm. Now, there's no denying that relations between most of Europe, certainly, if we limit ourselves to my own continent, and the USA, for much of the George Bush era, have not been good. I think to an extent Americans misinterpret this because they look at Tony Blair, and they see that there was a good personal and certainly professional relationship between Bush and Blair, which is undoubtedly true, and I think that was good probably both for Britain and for America. But Blair has gone. Bush, by definition, is about to go, or at least by the end of this year is about to go. So people look to move on. And, you know, you've got new leaders in France, you've got new leaders in the UK. And these people really, I think, do want a fresh start. But doesn't America, I mean, again, I kind of hesitate to say this because I'm a mere foreigner, but aren't we seeing in this election, whatever happens at the end of it, and none of us know, that America is kind of looking for a fresh start as well, I think.
Yes. To your phone calls. We'll take them momentarily. Vincent Dowd is our guest. He is Washington correspondent for the BBC. This is All Things Political. And, of course, most of our conversation today centering on what's going to happen in tomorrow's primaries, which indeed could decide the fate of Hillary Clinton's presidential bid. Or then again, maybe it won't. We welcome your calls. A couple lines are open. If you are anxious to speak, just get those lines right now. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Milwaukee callers, 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this time period, Martin Fletcher will be with us, NBC News Bureau Chief in Tel Aviv. He is the author of Breaking News, which is a memorable account of reporting from some of the most dangerous places in the world. All right, two phone calls for Vincent Dowd, Washington correspondent for the BBC. It's All Things Political this hour, and we start our calls with Victor from Oconomowoc. Hi, Victor.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, Vincent. Good morning to you both. I'm firmly convinced that if Hillary Clinton gets the nomination, John McCain will be president. The reason I think that is because the Obama supporters will sit home. If he wins, very great level of excitement. They'll be carried into a general election, and Obama could become president. I do want to throw out a couple of other statements here and then hang up because I'm getting a horrible echo.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So am I. Do you think that the Westminster style of government, Vincent, is more conducive to a policy discussion than the personalized politics we have here in the United States? And I'm wondering if we need to go through some sort of reform process. Great Britain has had several of these, the reform of 1832 under King William IV. and some other things that happened later in the Victorian era as well as the early 20th century, we have this antiquated electoral college system, and boy, you know, I think that thing is just, it's stick a fork in it, it's done. I'm going to hang up now because the echo is just reverberating through my head, and I'll take your
call. Well, that's not good. All right, thanks very much for your call. Vincent.
Okay, no, very, very interesting point. Okay, briefly on Obama, well, it's not for me as a BBC journalist to say kind of what should happen, but it is interesting, isn't it, that there is a sense that Senator Obama is spreading or stretching the electorate. So it, whether yeah. we go then to this, you know, contemporary political truism that, if the nominee for the Democrats turns out to be Hillary Clinton, there will be lots and lots of people who stay home and therefore don't vote Democrat and therefore becomes an involved argument, but therefore the Republicans may do much better at least and maybe even secure the presidency. That strikes me as being a bit simplistic. I mean, this is one of the reasons I think that we've seen an outbreak of, we were talking about politeness, the kind of relative politeness which has dominated recent debates on TV and wherever between them, because I think they're aware of this, that they don't want to split the party. And I suppose that's the argument, just looping back to what we were talking about 10 minutes ago, that's the argument for not going all the way to the wire with the going to Denver in August and making the decision there. Okay, on the historical topic, well, I'm always pleased to ramble on about historical topics. You know, it's very strange because when you come over here, for someone like me who's kind of had a parliamentary past in Britain and has reported on Parliament or whatever, we feel we're surrounded by history, but always feel, I think, that our parliamentary system is a bit like a kind of stately oak-built galleon kind of going through the high seas, and it kind of survives, but it's pretty much kind of out of date. And it's so fascinating to come here and hear an American say that you have an antiquated system. But it is true. You see, I've never reported an American election before, so I had to become much more au fait with the Electoral College system than I previously was. And it is true, when you go into some of the opaque areas of the Electoral College system, it does seem very strange, and at times it seems almost not very democratic in a small D sense. So, yeah, I am. It's also the broad point which the caller made, which I think is one I am going to stick with out of patriotism, if nothing else. I do like the British system, especially in Parliament, of having a debate, which can sometimes become a capital A argument, but certainly a debate. And, you know, one of the things which kind of eventually did for Tony Blair was the fact that he seemed to be turning his back too much on Parliament, and Parliament didn't like that. In fact, it happened with Margaret Thatcher as well. It's not a party political thing. It can happen to all leaders. So, yeah, that parliamentary system has some downsides, but I tend to think it has a big upside as well.
The other thing that's captured our fancy in this country, let's talk more about stretching the electorate and why it is Barack Obama has done that. Certainly, she's attracting large crowds. McCain isn't attracting crowds as large as either one of them, but he's getting 30,000 people at rallies. He's just drawing enormous numbers of people all over the country. What does that say, Vincent?
No, I mean, you're absolutely right there. I mean, like all journalists, I'm often too often stuck in the BBC bureau and not getting out. But I did go up and cover one of his big events up at American University. In fact, it was the one where Ted Kennedy came out and spoke in his favor, whatever it was, about a month ago now. And when you go to one of those rallies, you realize, I mean, one of my colleagues said, and he was right, he's saying there's something almost cultish about it. I don't want to overstate this, but it's got a kind of aura of religious cult around it. And I think he is, I mean, okay, it was a college, that has to be said, but he was talking to the kids, and for me now, a kid is anybody under about 23, 24. he was talking to the kids in a way they really, really appreciated and really understood. So he is tapping into something there in a way that Hillary Clinton just hasn't. I think because Hillary Clinton does not have a simple top-line message, she's not saying, let's do X, Y, and Z. Now, you can criticize Obama for continually talking about renewal and change and say those are rather, you know, vague, amorphous concepts, and I think there's some truth to that. But even so, it undeniably has hit home. And, you know, ultimately, democracies are about appealing to the electorate, and he's doing that incredibly well, far better, frankly, than I would have thought 3 or 4 months ago.
Linda from Monroe, hi.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, Mr. Dowd.
Good morning.
Now, I watched Hillary Clinton on Saturday Night Live, and I thought she was great. I support her for president because she's trying to stress the economy while the mainstream media is trying to ignore her. Now, when Hillary was up in Madison at Monona Terrace, she pointed to a gentleman and said that that gentleman in the T-shirt is right, that hedge fund dealers should be taxed. Now, the very next day down in Ohio, they brought that incident up, and the web picked it up, and one website had had over 360 letters on that subject. And the story later got to Australia and New Zealand as well. And the general public wants to know why the economy is going down along with the dollar. And I think Hillary Clinton is the one for president if a person would take the time to listen to her. And please comment.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. I think it's particularly interesting for someone like me who works in TV and radio. When you see points being made by, hey, a mere satire show, Saturday Night Live, I know it's important in American culture, but it's not supposed to be journalism. But actually, for the last 2 weeks, since they came back after the writer's strike, they've been having a go at the media. They had a very sharp go this week at Brian Williams and Tim Russert, I thought, for their kind of rather easy ways with Obama and the fact they don't really put him on the point on the spot. And I think actually there's some truth there. And I think you're seeing a little bit of a reaction to the SNL stuff actually in the media. I think some people are thinking in the American media anyway, because Saturday Night Live's not been outside the U.S., people are beginning to think, well, actually, maybe we have been giving Senator Obama a slightly easy ride. No, it's true. I mean, when one of the stories, because not everything is politics, one of the stories I've been reporting on here is the mortgage crisis and whatever. And clearly that and the exchange rate and those things are crucial to America's future. And it is odd, isn't it, how little they're featuring, I think, in the election campaign. Because everything's on this, to be pompous, meta level, really. Everything's looking at the big picture. Well, politics is about the big picture, but it's kind of about a lot of small pictures within the big picture. And it does strike me as something slightly lacking, if I dare say that, in this election campaign, that the degree of detail on the economy or, you know, on the environment, whatever, is actually really not there, because everything is just big picture, big picture, big picture.
But isn't it true that they do have the detail? All of them have detail. You just go to the website to get it. It's not part of their stump speech.
No. That's a very, very fair point. And, you know, we shouldn't be totally, either as journalists and as voters. I mean, I'm not a U.S. citizen, but even so, let's say I was a voter. All you've got to do is get online, and you can find that very, very easily. What I'm saying is, if you look at the broader coverage, and if you look certainly at the debates, they tend to be... it seems to me that the kind of the detailed discussion, is rather limited, and then you're very quickly getting into generalities. That kind of, as an outsider, that worries me very slightly about this election campaign.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Linda, very much for your call. We go to Basima from Milwaukee next. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Well, there is a bad echo. I just wanted to say briefly that I agree with your guest that Americans are looking for a new start. And as a voter who is for Senator Obama, the one thing that I admire and respect more about him in this election year is the way he's getting American voters to remember that we are citizens and that our power is in getting up and working with our politicians, not allowing them to do everything themselves and holding them accountable. And honestly, I don't care who gets elected. I think the fire's been lit and citizens are going to start back being citizens again.
Citizens being involved. Do you think he's had that effect on the American populace, Vincent?
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. Because I'm here in D.C. and just occasionally I have an afternoon off, at the weekend I went and I walked around the FDR Memorial, which is kind of a couple of miles from where I work here in downtown D.C. And that just set me thinking, and I went to the bookshop and whatever, and it set me thinking about that long phase of American politics where things were really live, where there was a lot happening, there was a lot of rows going on, and a lot of people didn't like Roosevelt, and a lot of people really did like him. All I'm saying is that politics in that era, and he was around for, what, three and a bit terms, was really active. and there was a big social debate going on about what government should do, and, if I can put it in incredibly generalized terms, what America should be. And all the world should have an interest in what America is or should or could be, because America's an incredibly influential country around the world. And if, and again, it's not up to, I'm not a citizen, I don't vote here, but if the outcome, whatever happens in November of this year, and whoever is in the White House come January of next year, if the outcome is that people are more engaged, more involved, I think it's fairly obvious that there has been, over the past few years, a kind of a process of people resiling, rather, from politics, of people turning away a little bit. That can only be good, can't it? I mean, no one, possibly from whatever party or from no party whatsoever, could possibly complain at that, I don't think.
Right. Thank you so much for your call. One line is open. Join us at 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. It's All Things Political this hour with Vincent Dowd, who's the Washington correspondent for the BBC. Jim from Milwaukee, hi.
Yeah, hi. Couple things. First off, I like the British system because I liked watching the sessions where there would be banter back and forth between the representatives and Tony Blair. And I always struck me, even though I didn't agree with Blair in a lot of ways and thought he was a sellout, that he still, he was very, very quick and smart, and it just occurred to me that Bush would have been eaten alive by the process. But I like the process because I think the British process encourages more exchange of ideas. Regarding Hillary, quickly, I think people, if you wanted a progressive woman, you could get somebody like Jan Schakowsky or some of the black congresswomen or perhaps even a Latino as well, but I just don't see her as progressive. And, being for NAFTA with Bill and on the cover of Fortune magazine. And the thing that struck me also about the Iraq war thing is that sharp as she is, and then being, gulled into the war by Bush, and it occurred to me, why did she go along with this? It wasn't because she didn't see it. It struck me that either A, covertly, she wanted to go along with the war, or B, she was punked. But either way, what difference does it make? She basically supported us going into the war, and it's just amazing to me that her supporters can overlook this.
And Obama's really been on that the last couple of days with the National Intelligence Estimate report that he says she didn't read and she should have. That's a new line of attack on his part. Let's talk about Iraq for a moment and how this is playing into the votes. It certainly is going to be a big part of the general election because you couldn't have two different ideas about Iraq than the Democratic idea and McCain's idea. What about Iraq, Vincent?
Yeah, no, it's interesting, isn't it? It's kind of at the moment sort of the dog which didn't bark. It's something which isn't really playing, and not so much now, but certainly until about, I would guess, 2 months ago, various editors in London were saying to me, well, Vincent, we're going to be talking about, the influence of Iraq in the election. I was saying, well, actually, no, because it kind of isn't there. You see with that, I think almost amusing, I'm going to acknowledge that, almost amusing TV ad, which Hillary Clinton has been running, let's call it the 3 a.m. one.
Yeah.
You see that she has been trying to emphasize her credentials as somebody who, although actually I think I'm right in saying he doesn't mention international crisis, the implication is she's up at 3 a.m. In her day clothes, which is perhaps not very likely, coping with some great international crisis. But the truth is, to state the absolutely bindingly obvious, the one area where she has had something of a track record in terms of international affairs has actually now become a vast Achilles heel. And it's an Achilles heel into which Senator Obama is very, very happy, almost on a daily basis, kind of shooting arrows. And that's her record on Iraq. I think the truth is that the point of genius of Senator Obama is, and I have to acknowledge this is his own interpretation of himself as well, but he's right in this case. He saw that Americans were right and ripe for a change, and that Hillary Clinton didn't see that. So she broadly went along with the orthodoxy, and that is doing kind of vast damage now. One thing which intrigues me, and maybe before too long, sadly, we'll be doing a story on this. You probably know, Kathleen, that we're heading now in the U.S. to well, if one accepts there's a certain number of casualties every week, which is tragic, that we're probably going to hit 4,000 before too long. Mm. And I would imagine that's going to be in the next month or so. Now, Pat, will that be a point at which there's some national soul-searching? I mean, in the UK, we have casualties as well, but it's going to sound a horribly cold-hearted thing to say, but we're only, and I don't mean that only in a cruel way, only at 175, mm-hmm. or thereabouts, I think. So it hasn't quite been the nationally dominant story at some points, which it has been here. I wonder if, as we hit 4,000 servicemen and servicewomen in Iraq dying in that conflict, whether that will bring the issue up again. It is strange, isn't it, that Senator McCain, who, you know, we were all right again, before I came over here last summer, I did a piece more or less, which I wouldn't want to be repeated now, more or less a kind of writing him off. And I was wrong, as many people were wrong. And partly, it's not entirely this. Of course, any politician has to be assessed in terms of who his competitors are. But it's partly, of course, that he's been kind of right on the surge, or he's been right enough mm-hmm. that his kind of hard line on that actually is playing well with voters. It will be fascinating once we get past this big hurdle. Who knows, we may get past it this week and get into what you might call more the general election phase of the entire thing, whether then there is a real debate on Iraq between Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama and John McCain. I think that's going to be very interesting to see.
I think McCain's going to have a hard time with this issue, Vincent, because I think that both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama effectively bring up the point that this was a wrongheaded thing to do. You look at the midterm elections, you look at where the American public stands on the issue of whether or not we should be there, and, you know, the polls show most Americans say, we shouldn't have done this. So I think it's going to be real hard for McCain to fashion an argument. The surge may be working, but should we have been there in the first place?
Indeed, but I wonder whether, and you might say this is a kind of generalized argument, that some arguments are sharp-edged and some are not in politics. I wonder whether his status as a hero, as a Vietnam
hero.
Yes,
you're right.
You know, you'd never hear the word hero ever used in Britain in a political context. It would sound so strange. But here, people talk about heroes. Anyway, I'm not going to argue against that. He did very brave things when he was in Vietnam, definitely. And he's kind of broad. The broad feeling that John McCain is a maverick. I mean, maybe he's less of a maverick than he was, but the fact that more broadly, not necessarily on the surge issue, where clearly he broadly took the Bush line, that more broadly that he's been his own man, maybe that will kind of seep into his reputation more generally, and maybe people will kind of, because he's kind of a conservative, although not an extreme conservative, who liberals tend to kind of either like or tolerate. That, you know, he's a kind of a conservative who liberals can do business with. Let's put it that way. I wonder whether it's actually going to be a major hurdle for him in the general election. But none of us know. I mean, we'll know that in a couple of months from now, I suppose.
Right, right. So do you think Hillary Clinton should have been wearing pajamas when she answered the phone?
I just thought, I'm in radio now.
I
was in TV for like 12 years. And I thought, as a piece of filmmaking, it was very strange to see. Am I imagining she was wearing pearls? I mean, that may be a fantasy. maybe it was on Saturday Night Live she was wearing pearls. But I thought it was very strange that at 3 a.m. she was alone and dressed as if it was in the middle of a day, whereas everyone else in the ad was in their pajamas. Maybe she should just look slightly distrait, maybe as if she'd just been hauled out of bed. Because as we saw on Saturday Night Live, where she delivered actually a couple of lines with great humor and great the right timing, she can be a bit of an actress as well.
Right. Thanks, Jim, for your call. Paul from La Crosse, hi.
Yeah, there's one thing that hasn't been discussed yet, and I think it's important. Barack Obama is simply a better politician than Hillary Clinton is. If money is the mother's milk of politics, mm-hmm. he raises more money faster than anybody in the history of our country.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking about organization, as far back as September, the Clinton campaign in Iowa was saying, we're outnumbered here. We need 100 people. They didn't get them.
Mm-hmm.
He puts people on the ground, thousands of people on the ground. He raises tons of money. And let's look at that ad for just a second. She comes out with that ad with that Band of Brothers music playing in the background. 8 hours later, he's done a parody of it and slammed her for her stance on Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
8 hours, you have to be very quick on your feet to come up with a professional ad. That means that they anticipated the ad, they had something in mind when her ad ran, and they were able to get it up in 8 hours. That shows, you know, great forethought. And like I said, He is simply a better politician than Hillary Clinton.
Thanks. Point well taken. He's got one heck of an organization, Vincent.
He is fantastic. No, don't let me. Nobody should get me wrong. I'm absolutely a great admirer of the organization. He's fantastically well organized. When you think, I mean, and we're not even talking about, you know, people at home in Britain now, but when you think that even in the U.S., unless you happen to be in Illinois or wherever, you probably had not heard of Barack Obama until
right, yes.
that speech in the 2004 Democratic Convention. Mm-hmm. He's only been in, I was going to say Westminster, that's a Freudian slip, he's only been in Washington for, what, 3 years or just over. And it's just over, what, 3.5 years since John Kerry kind of got in that spot in the Democratic Convention and he made that much publicized speech. It is the most amazing ascent. I mean, people continually compare him to JFK. Well, JFK came from, one of the great, maybe the great American political family of its era, at least, one of the greatest in history. And he'd been around as a representative and then as a senator for whatever it was, 11, 12 years. Barack Obama really, you know, is in Illinois in the local state senate, and he's been here only kind of 3 years. It is the most extraordinary story.
It is an extraordinary story, no doubt about it. Thank you, Paul, for the call. We need to pause for a moment, and we'll return. Vincent Dowd is our guest on All Things Political this Monday, Washington correspondent for the BBC, and he's been keenly observing the American political race, and we've been talking, because it's the big story of the week, about what's going to happen in the primaries tomorrow and what kind of campaigns everybody's been running. And we have one line open, so join us if you'd like. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, Milwaukee 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, we'll be speaking with the author of a piece in the March issue of The Atlantic, our guest, a land use strategist and developer. And he focuses on transforming traditional and suburban downtowns and other places that provide walkable urbanism. He says that the subprime crisis is just the tip of the iceberg. Fundamental changes in American life may turn today's McMansions into tomorrow's tenements. So that's coming up, hour number two of our show. Vincent Dowd, Washington correspondent for the BBC, is here this hour, and we are taking your phone calls. We go next to Peter from Appleton. Hi.
Hi there. Good morning.
Hi.
This question is for our guest. It's about foreign countries. Looks like they're really participating and watching the American politics. Can you reaffirm that?
Oh, yes. No, I think there is a fascination, an absolute fascination. Now, you've got to be realistic and say one of the reasons that we get so, if I was sitting in London, which I'm not, but if I was sitting in London, I could turn on and see lots and lots of American politics on TV, just as I could see lots of American drama series or, you know, comedy series on TV. So there's lots of American culture flooding in all the time, which people are always in two minds about. I mean, it's exactly the same whether you're in Britain or Germany or Canada or Australia, that people have this kind of slight schism, I think, in their minds that they're great admirers of American as a cultural force. And I used to be the arts correspondent when I was back in London, so I was forever doing stuff about that. But they're slightly jumpy, let's put it that way, when it comes to America as a political force. But there's absolutely no lack of interest. And maybe not 3 or 4 months ago, but I think now, you know, I mean, my father, who kind of lives in the English Midlands, was saying to me on the phone in his 80s, he was saying to me, oh, Vincent, you know, who do you think is going to win the Democratic nomination? So people are interested, and there's that element to which it's just good day-to-day drama, and it's soap opera. And when you get two characters, Hillary Clinton, clearly one of the most famous people, one of the most famous women in the world, up against Barack Obama, not someone people in the UK or Europe generally would have known a while ago, but now they know him, and I think broadly, although they don't know him in detail, they like what they see. People are interested. So, you know, as I say, it's rather like watching a political soap opera. And what's more, you know, there's going to be big drama at the end of it when you have a decision in the Democratic race, and then you have the season finale when you have what happens on November the 4th. So, you know, this will be keeping the drama going for almost 6 months yet.
So are you going to tell us how you answered your dad?
I think that's between me and my father at this point.
Okay. Let's go next to Dan from White Lake. Hi, Dan.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm curious, what is it in the UK that triggers the election of a new prime minister And doesn't that have the effect of eliminating a big problem in American politics, which is the lame duck president for the last 2 or 3 years of his second term? And I'll listen off the air.
Thanks, Dan.
No, you're absolutely right about the lame duck thing. Again, because this is the first time I've been based here, and I'm having to think about things, frankly, I'd just taken for granted before. It had never occurred to me before coming here that, I think especially perhaps if you have the second term of a president, you kind of have the last year. It's a bit of a non-entity. I mean, some of my colleagues went to cover Mr. Bush's trip to Africa, for instance, which is something we in the World Service take a great interest in, because we have a vast listenership in large parts of Africa. But I think there wasn't a vast amount of interest in it here. I mean, you'd find very heavyweight pieces on it in the Washington Post or the New York Times. But by and large, people are beginning to withdraw from that. On that technical question, which is very interesting, and I will only talk briefly about it, about the kind of process in Britain, we don't have a constitution. We have the most extraordinary way of running a country, but it kind of seems to work because, you know, we've been around for several hundred years and whatever. And the only rule, and I don't think most people in Britain really know this, the only absolute rule in Britain is that no parliament can last more than 5 years. And in fact, in reality, parliaments tend to last more like 4 and a bit years. But beyond that, it's all made up as we go along. But the British genius really is for doing things extempore, really, and ad lib. And that's what we do. So there's no real organized way of doing things. And just briefly, as I've mentioned before, we did have an extraordinary process this time around with kind of moving from one prime minister to the other, almost being a party thing rather than anything. Well, it was a party thing rather than something which was voted on. You know, there's still a little bit of resentment around that, and it may be something which comes out in the next election, that people don't like having a prime minister foisted on them. So the process in Britain is make it up as you go along, which is kind of pretty much the case with everything in the UK in public life, really.
Mm-hmm. And how are his favorability ratings right now, Vincent Brown's?
He started off at such a high level that we kind of all thought that he might call an election almost immediately, which has happened before when someone has taken over. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen because there were a series of involved scandals, again, to do with the economy and to do with Northern Rock, the building society stroke bank, which collapsed and which was effectively nationalised, and it wasn't seen that that had been handled very well. Now, that's very bad for Gordon Brown, because Gordon Brown's reputation, which I would say is solidly founded, is of being a very sober, in every sense, Scot, very reliable. You know, English people like me especially tend to look at Scots and actually think they're going to be very good with money. Lots of the British banks were based on Scottish families and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So for him to be involved in, I'm not going to call it a scandal, but a big problem with Northern Rock actually damaged his standing a lot. And so now he's kind of bumping along there. I mean, he's not quite down at George Bush levels, but I don't think they're going to be calling an election any day soon, certainly. Mm-hmm.
We go next to Ellen from Milwaukee. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. I was inspired to call a couple callers back who said that Barack is a better politician than Hillary. And I would say that Barack is a much better campaigner than Hillary. He's a much better organizer than Hillary. As far as being a better politician, I haven't any clue. But I know that Hillary is an incredible politician. For somebody who has had such vitriol, such hatred and spewing of venom at her by the Republicans, she has been an extremely effective cross-party politician who has effectively worked across parties, doesn't carry grudges, and has managed to work with some of the ugliest and nastiest of the Republicans. And I think that shows incredible leadership. Don't know whether Barack is capable of these things or not, but I would say that as far as a politician, which is, after all, what we need in politics, that Hillary has shown herself through all of her time as an extremely good politician. Unfortunately, she has not been a successful campaigner in this campaign with such an excellent campaigner and organizer as Barack. I don't know who's going to be the best person for president. I'm just saying that I think that as a politician, she has proven herself to be very effective across party lines.
Let me ask you, Ellen, should she, and this is just common wisdom, who knows, the polls have just been so wrong this year, but should she win one of the major states and lose one of the major states tomorrow, what do you think she should do?
I think even if she loses both of them, she should stick with it. First of all, I love the drama and the excitement of the whole thing.
Right, I know you hate for it to be over, right?
And I think that she should fight.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all should see it through to the end, and I don't see a problem in it. I think it's the right thing to do, okay. And I think it should happen more often, actually.
Mm-hmm. Vincent?
I think that's one of the best points that's been made in this hour, really. The difference between being a good campaigner and a good, let me use the word statesman or stateswoman, it's totally, totally different. And yes, and again, without kind of... committing my own opinion to the record, as it were. It is true, I think, still, that we don't know that much about Senator Obama and what his policies would be. But for someone like me, you know, who works for the BBC World Service and looks primarily at international news, it's very interesting. When you look back, most presidents who get into the Oval Office don't have much foreign affairs experience. Hillary Clinton slightly hypes hers. I mean, she's kind of been the husband of a president. We don't normally take that as being a kind of precursor to actually taking on the powers yourself. But it is true, in terms of Senator Obama, we really don't know what his foreign policy would be. But you really have to go back, I would say, to George Bush Sr. to find anybody who entered the White House having lots and lots of foreign policy experience. Mm-hmm. So it's not unusual. I mean, lots of other people really have had little or, frankly, no foreign experience at all.
Hmm. Well, darn, we're out of time. I feel like we should send each other emails on Wednesday just to see what happened tomorrow. Vincent, always a great pleasure to speak with you. Please join us again as the campaign keeps going on.
I will. You're very welcome.
Thanks, Vincent. Vincent Dowd, he's the Washington correspondent for the BBC. And fun to talk to, always. It's nice to get that perspective of somebody who didn't grow up here, isn't it, to look at the funny things about our system and the wonderful things about it and compare it to his. Well, thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this program and to John Treader for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios. And thanks, as always, for your calls, everyone. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return with more Monday morning conversation and a really good show coming up. So please stay with us. I'm Kathleen Dunn. It's a minute now before 10 o'clock, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.